Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Scales Corporation Interim Results Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Andy Borland, Managing Director. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I'd like to welcome you all to the Scales half-year results announcement for the 6 months ending 30 June 2020. With me today is Steve Kennelly, our CFO. Earlier this morning, we lodged our results with the NZX, which included a presentation pack that we'll base our comments on during this call. Steve and I will run through the presentation slides and we'll then take questions. An agenda is provided on slide two. We'd like to cover our response to and effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, as this has obviously had consequences for each of our businesses. On slide four, we've summarised some of the key strengths that we believe represent Scales and which have been core to ensuring that the group has operated successfully throughout the recent COVID-19 pandemic. These are uncertain and unusual times, but we're proud of the way that our team has united and how our diversification strategies and vertically integrated operations have served us well. We've benefited from having a strong financial position and, of course, our hard-working and courageous team. We look forward to building on these strengths, whatever the future holds. Our ability to operate during the lockdown alert levels wouldn't have been possible without our people, so their health and safety was our foremost priority. Some of the practices put in place are noted on slide five. We're pleased to say that all staff were retained on full salaries and wages without making use of the government subsidy schemes. However, this did impact us financially from a cost and productivity viewpoint. Our RSC and other workers were supported until they could be repatriated, and we continue to take part in discussions with government around the future of this vital scheme. A scheme without which the horticulture industry would face considerable labour shortages. Moving on to slide six. Each of Scales' businesses were and still are in the privileged position of being deemed essential. As I've already mentioned, we're grateful for the efforts made by each and every staff member prior to, during and after the initial lockdown period. We wouldn't have been able to continue trading had it not been for the overall team effort, particularly in Mr. Apple, when lockdown occurred during our busiest period of the year. Advice and direction were received from the Ministry of Primary Industries at the start of the Level 4 lockdown period around safe practices in the workplace and transporting goods, and these were implemented swiftly in accordance with best practice. However, as recent resurgence of COVID-19 has shown, the ongoing effects of the virus will continue for some time. We believe that the diversified nature of Scales and the resources available to us will allow us to operate successfully over the short to medium term as the pandemic evolves. Whilst the pandemic has created some uncertainty for our operation and in global markets overall, we believe that we can operate successfully in a new normal, as noted on slide seven. We continue to maintain elevated hygiene practices and policies that are in place that will allow us to transition back into lockdown if required. And the current lockdown in Auckland serves as an example of this. We're also looking forward cautiously but proactively to the future, working closely with New Zealand government agencies on the RSE scheme, as well as continuing to investigate potential investment opportunities. We have confidence that we'll continue to operate successfully in a new COVID-19 world. Turning to slide nine and some first half of financial and operational highlights for the group. Given the current pandemic conditions, we're happy to report a half year underlying NPAT of $29.2 million and an underlying EBITDA of $44.4 million. These are only 3% and 6% down on prior year respectively, although the earnings mix by division does differ from prior years. Mr. Apple benefited from having sufficient resource during its peak period to harvest record export volumes of 3.9 million TCEs. However, COVID-19 did disrupt supply and demand, particularly in Asia and near markets. I'll touch on that more later. Food ingredients benefit from increased demand for pet food as customers sought to shore up supply, providing us with an outstanding result for the period. Moving on to an update on sustainability on slide 11. Once again, Karen Morris and her team had a busy 6 months with the additional impact of COVID-19 to deal with. By ensuring rigorous health and safety processes and a safe working environment, all our businesses were able to run effectively in lockdown throughout their peak periods. We're also proud to support a number of community initiatives both here and in China, and we're continuing to supply apples into national food bank networks. Some environmental highlights from the last 6 months include a reduction of level of waste that goes to landfill, commencement of our climate change adaptation project, and continuation of the management, monitoring and protection of our water right resources. Turning to slide 12, and the subheading there says it all. More than ever, it's all about our people. Without their dedication, care and attention, the business could have experienced quite a different result. Some of our people-focused initiatives include concentrating on health and safety critical risks and related training schemes, development of 3-year health and safety strategies for Mr. Apple and logistics, initiation of a pay equality review throughout the group, and the launch of an intranet for the board and senior managers so they can more easily access their policies and procedures. I'll now pass over to Steve to discuss the financial results for the first half of the year. Steve.
Thanks, Andy. Turning to slide 14 and our group financial performance. As Andy has noted, group underlying NPAT for the 6 months to 30 June 2020 was $29.2 million, with underlying EBITDA of $44.4 million. The table on this slide shows a reconciliation of our underlying results to our NZ IFRS reported results. And as you'll see, as there has been less M&A activity in the first half of this year compared to the first half of 2019, our underlying and reported numbers are more comparable this year. If we move on to slide 15, you'll see a summary of our divisional performance, comparing the first half of 2020 to the comparable period last year. In addition, we've summarised the results from the second half of last year, which highlights the seasonality experienced by horticulture and logistics in particular. Some points to note, as Andy commented earlier, the horticulture division was affected by COVID-19 lockdowns. Whilst the division experienced strong sales into Europe, it was adversely affected by unusual sales patterns into Asia and near markets. As a result, the division's results are behind the same period last year. It's also worth noting that NZ IFRS statements require us to measure unsold agricultural produce at fair value less cost to sell. This means the expected profit on our unsold fruit is effectively recognised in our interim result, and this results in additional seasonality and profitability. Food ingredients benefited from strong first half demand as customers pre-purchased pet food ingredients. Logistics continued to trade in line with last year. Again, you'll note that logistics profitability is seasonal due to its exposure to the agribusiness sector. Turning to our balance sheet on slide 16, we continue to be in a strong financial position with net cash of $54.8 million as at 30 June 2020, providing us with leverage for future investments. And as noted on the slide, there was an increase in agricultural produce inventory at 30 June 2020 compared to 30 June 2019. This was due to a higher percentage of unsold fruit at the end of the period. As previously mentioned, this was due to supply and demand in the Asia region being affected by COVID-19. However, as at today's date, only around 20% of fruit remains to be sold. I now hand you back to Andy, who will give you a further update on each division.
Thanks, Steve. Slide 18 provides a summary of Mr. Apple's volumes this season. Pleasingly, the final export crop is 3.9 million TCEs, ahead of previous guidance, and also representing a new record for Mr. Apple. Our export packout is approximately 76%, slightly lower than last year's rate of 79% due to a lower packout on the final packed volumes. Premium variety volumes continue to increase, up 6% compared to last year, and we're delighted to see significant increases in the sales of our newest brands, Posy and Dazzle. Turning to slide 19 and a summary of horticulture markets, our overall strategy of diversification in both geographical and channel markets proved more than ever to be of benefit this year. Whilst we remain committed to the Asia and Middle East markets, we continue to Our continued participation in Europe and UK markets provided us with an ability to withstand the effects of COVID-19 around the world this year. Our investment in Fernridge Fresh also provides us with an alternative export channel for horticulture produce, and it continues to perform well. I'd now like to talk about horticulture's margins, starting on slide 20. We recently undertook a comprehensive review of profit margins within the horticulture division. This review identified that Mr. Apple has experienced a 4% decrease in EBIT margins over the five-year period from 2015 to 2019. The principal reasons for the decrease were identified as increases in labour and compliance costs, which have only partially been offset by increased orchard gate returns. We're aware that the division continues to face headwinds in respect of margins, and accordingly Andrew Van Workum and his team, together with direction from the board, are focused on initiatives that will maintain the existing margin rates. These initiatives include continuing maturity of recent redeveloped orchards with premium varieties, particularly Dazzle and Posy, adoption of innovative new 2D planting techniques which will allow trees to be pruned, thinned and picked more efficiently, development of the division's new efficient cool store at Whakatū, and a comprehensive review of orchards and varieties in order to achieve higher values and yields. Slide 21 shows the trajectory of EBIT margins in recent years as outlined by our margin review work. Whilst 2020's margins are still to be determined, we believe that these are likely to be below recent years, primarily due to pricing pressures in the Asian markets due to COVID-19. However, we also believe that these pressures will be temporary and that margins will return to more normal 2019 levels from 2021 onwards. Moving on to the Food Ingredients division in slide 22. Food Ingredients experienced an outstanding first half of the year with a 116% increase in profitability, mainly as a result of customers pre-ordering inventory due to COVID-19. Shelby in particular was able to capitalise on these opportunities, resulting in a 14% increase in the division's volumes compared to the same period last year. The effect of COVID-19 on the division and on the industry in general remains uncertain. However, we are seeing numerous reports of global increases in pet adoption rates, which we consider to be positive for the industry in the medium term. John Sainsbury, Brett Frankel and their respective teams are focused on how the pandemic is affecting the pet food industry and, where possible, will take steps to benefit from those changes. Profruit also performed well, benefiting from high fruit bricks and exceptional yields. Accordingly, its sales are ahead of the same period last year. Turning to logistics on slide 23, logistics continue its gradual upward trend, generating a profit slightly ahead of the first half of 2019 thanks to the hard work and initiatives of Kent Ritchie and his team. Whilst air freight services experienced some disruption due to COVID-19, the division benefited from exposure to the essential agribusiness sector. We have confidence that the industry and the government support will ensure there is sufficient air freight capacity in future periods. We've also decided to combine our sea and air freight businesses under one Scales Logistics brand. This will be rolled out over the forthcoming period. Lastly, on the full year outlook and slide 25, as noted in our recent business update, we anticipate that our full year underlying net profit will be at the bottom end of our previously advised guidance range of between $30 million and $36 million. This takes into account the impact that COVID-19 has had and continues to have on each of our businesses. Horticulture is expected to experience ongoing disruption in global markets, but we believe Food Ingredients will continue its strong performance, and logistics is expected to be in line with expectations due to agribusiness customers' volumes. We're currently reviewing a number of possible investment opportunities, and we continue to proactively seek out further investment opportunities. However, ability to review, meet with management teams and conduct diligence has been hampered by the inability to travel. Furthermore, whilst offering up opportunities, we naturally wish to proceed cautiously in the current uncertain climate. That concludes today's formal presentation, although we point you towards Appendix 1 of the presentation pack, which provides additional financial information and reconciles underlying earnings to reported earnings for each of our divisions as well as the group. We're now happy to take questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Guy Hooper from Forsyth Barr. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, team. First question for me, just, I guess, on the horticulture business. What does the result imply for second half apple prices? Are we assuming prices remain soft, weaken further, strengthen? What's being assumed in that?
So we've valued our unsold 30 June stock at what we believe the prices will be at. And that's really, I think, a continuation of where they were at 30 June. So we're not anticipating any further weakening.
Yeah. Is there, I guess, any, you know, what are stocks in China like at the moment in terms of apples? Is there any risk that they could weaken, or, you know, how long is that, I guess, the bigger domestic crop likely to be an overhang on prices?
No, Guy, it's all gone now. Their harvest won't have started, but the real issue there is that, well, you know, the later season that we're selling are into programs, retail programs we've got up there, so, you know, we're relatively, you know, we're aware of the market conditions and understand them. So, you know, our programs for our late queens are settled, if you like, but just, you know, have to continue through. We're continuing with likes of Europe market right through till October, November.
Okay, thanks. And then just, I guess, on the food ingredients business and the growth, can you give us a bit of colour as to what exactly the drivers were? I mean, you've called out both pull forward of demand, which, does that mean you think that there's a possibility the growth softens in the second half? And then there's also reference to new volumes or new business in the US. Is that new customers? How recurring is that growth?
Look, I think we are expecting the sort of overperformance to, you know, to even out. I mean, you know, but, you know, in terms of people did stockpile a little bit, I think, but I think the general trend around the increased pet adoption rates has also driven an increase in, an overall increase in demand. So I think, you know, if things do stabilise, you know, we're happy, though, that we've got new products and hoping to start up operating out of a new facility in Dodge City in the US for Shelby in the last quarter of this year, which will, you know, contribute, if you like, new volumes for 2021 anyway.
What does the new facility do for capacity? How material is that?
Well, it's right beside a big beef plant. And so it does provide additional volumes of frozen, plate frozen material, and so we've sort of linked it right beside a large beef plant, and then it'll go, you know, if you like, across the road into a plant that we've going to start operating, and that'll just add net volume to our Shelby business in America.
So have you bought that plant, or you're leasing it, or?
No, we're just operating it under a sort of a supply contract.
Okay. That's all the questions from me. Thanks.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Mi Zi Ho from Nikko Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Got a question on the horticulture side. I think Guy had already touched a little bit on that. Just want to dig deeper. You said this year you had price pressures on the apple sales, and particularly in Asia. How confident are you that, given COVID, that still be around, that what are you thinking of mitigating that same result again next year, if you like? And how how you see it playing out next year. Just trying to see if there's like a structural kind of change in terms of maybe the Chinese market was that, you know, cold storing the apples more and it'll affect price. But what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, look, we are calling sort of this impact, particularly in China, as a COVID-related event. If you, the lockdown started on the 25th of January and went to the 25th of March, so they're exactly 2 months ahead of us. And during their lockdown, their, you know, large crop that they had last year didn't move much, and then started moving when our window sort of opened, so it clashed. So that's really is a one-off. We don't expect that to be happening next year. And so, you know, what we're seeing in the market, what we're hearing in the market is, you know, very much the COVID-19 impact in Asia did slow that market, and it should revert to normal next year, or whatever, looks like. But we don't expect to see that price pressure and that volume pressure to be repeated.
Okay, thank you. Just one more question from me. With regards to your RSE season, you said you were working closely with the government. Do you have anything more to expand on that? Like, what kind of, are you seeing problems in getting workers to New Zealand, or what are your traction on that for the government so far?
Well, we've been at the industry body, New Zealand Apples and Pears, all horticultural, and, you know, horticulture New Zealand, they've all, if you like, working with their various government agencies to, you know, to discuss and establish ways of bringing the RSE workers back in. Clearly, that's had a little bit of a, you know, hiccup, if you like, with this Auckland outbreak. But we're expecting that, you know, most of them are coming from countries that don't have COVID. And so there should be, some sort of system to be able to have them, you know, come from their non-COVID country to our under control COVID country and work safely and effectively. So that's what we're hoping for and anticipating, you know, to be agreed with the government. But reality is that's the workers need to be back in the country in the, you know, November, December period, and moving then on into the critical harvest period for us, which is March, April.
Right, so would you say that you are confident or positive in that kind of timeline to bring them back?
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's an essential scheme. It's a very win-win scheme. So the Pacific Island countries, Samoa, Tonga, very much, just those examples, Vanuatu, very much rely on it for export earnings, if you like. They're exporting labour. So it's a win-win. And, you know, we would expect some sort of common sense to prevail, and also that, you know, the underlying thinking is that, you know, the workers and the communities they work in will be able to remain safe. That's the, you know, the MPI setup, if you like, from the that helped us to stay working in lockdown four was very much predicated on, you're able to work if you can keep your workers and the community safe. And I think we proved that very, very effectively by the way of the processes that we put in place to our change of our operations, and we would expect that to continue for the 2021 summer harvest.
Okay, cool. Thanks, guys. That's all from me.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Chris Byrne from Craigs IP. Please go ahead.
Morning, Andy. Morning, Steve. Can you give us a bit of an indication of what trends have been like, I say, over the last 6 weeks for like some food ingredients, which has had a ripper of a first half? Have things sort of tapered off, or are you sort of seeing like other businesses where demand is holding up quite strongly, and it's quite difficult to determine what's going to be ongoing and sustainable versus what was sort of, I guess, stocking up.
Yeah, look, we are expecting, the second 6 months to be, if you like, solid again, if you like. So we're not seeing demand coming off. If anything, because of the problems in the US market in terms of the ongoing COVID in likes of the large meat packers, we're very, very short of stock. So we had more stock, we would have more trade, but we've got enough to keep trading at pretty good volumes. So no, I think feeling like the demand is holding at this stage anyway, Chris.
Okay. And in terms of into the horticultural business, the actions you're taking to sort of drive margins back up or certainly hold them at FY19 levels, do you see some upside in margins in that regard? I mean, if you expect pricing to revert to more normalised levels in Asia and you're taking these actions to sort of take cost out, get efficiencies, more higher value varieties being planted, do you see some upside to those sort of numbers?
I think we see pretty good, solid performance, 21 on, if things revert to, that 2019 level in terms of margin, but also then these initiatives start kicking in. So very much expecting, I've got high hopes for, the values of sales for Dazzle and Posy, very much pivoting quickly towards, having an online, portal up in China, because that's obviously been a big, shift, if you like, or they've just shifted further into e-commerce sales. So all of those things, are really expecting, to see, normalize those Mr. Apple earnings, or back to a more normal situation, and these initiatives will contribute to, ongoing good performance. That's our thinking.
Okay. And in terms of just your experience over the last several years in apples, in terms of, you see some new price points being hit in Asia because of their existing apples being in competing with yours. Have you seen in the past where that sort of anchored prices into the next year and it can take a year or so or two seasons before you get back to more normalised pricing because they sort of go, look, oh, these are the prices we got the apples for last year, and that just gives them more confidence to negotiate more. Have you sort of seen that in the past? And so therefore it takes a couple of years to sort of clear back towards normal previous pricing levels?
No, that isn't. I don't think I've ever seen that, Chris. I mean, I think it does seem that, this has had a one-off effect by that. Their very large crop being held up and that having an impact. And, that did have an impact, COVID had an impact around, all of Asia. I mean, Thailand's normally a very strong market for us. It was harder this year. The best market in Asia this year was Vietnam and later in Taiwan. And I think it was because both those countries really handled COVID well.
Yep.
We would expect next year China and Asia to be what we would call more normal and not have that impact of their crop being late in our season.
Okay. And just finally, one from me on the food ingredients side of the business. You obviously got a fair amount of cash for investment purposes as well, not just acquisitions. I mean, with that business going very well, I mean, I know you're looking at opening another, or it's in your supply contract basis on the new facility you've talked about, but are there opportunities to accelerate investment into the food ingredients business that you're sort of looking at given what's happened over the first half?
Yeah, there are, and to be fair, they're mainly in the US, so not being able to get up there is a little bit of a holding us back a bit, but we've picked up great people in the Shelby business, and we're sort of now telling them, well, we don't know how long it is before we can get up there, so we're getting them to get on with proactively looking at some of these new opportunities. So, it's a huge industry in the US, and Shelby's very well placed and highly regarded as a team, and you know, we are active, you know, got some good opportunities to look at up there for both, I would call it organic growth, but also, you know, by, you know, potential, if you like, bolt-on acquisitions.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Christian Bell from Jarden. Please go ahead.
Hi, Andy and Steve. I was just wanting to build on the previous question asked around slide 21. You've got the EBIT margin track through time. Even though you just addressed it, just what exactly are the assumptions going into that? Like, I mean, because you've got the combination of the premium varieties coming in, cost out initiatives, sort of like, are you kind of, and also a shift from Asia to Europe this year, assuming that you're going to shift back to a more Asia-focused volumes next year on top of the premium price uplifts and the cost out, just wanting to understand exactly what is going into those EBIT margins.
Yeah, well, I think the as the yield improves on these new plantings of 140 hectares, you know, that's a contributor for a start, and they are higher value than even our, you know, current premium prices for the ones we're expecting for Dazzle and Posy. So that's it's a big driver, you know, because those each year those plantings are yielding more per hectare. It takes 5 years to get to full maturity. So that's a definite contributor, as is the new planting technique. You know, as the more of those hectares come on, the cost of harvesting them, the cost of spraying them, etc., is lowered. So that's that 2D planting structure is, you know, and we actually believe that structure will deliver more yield per hectare. So there's sort of a that second point is really a production and cost production increase and cost decrease. The new cool store, you know, it's being built right beside our biggest pack house at Whakatū at the Mr. Apple head office there. We've got the land there that we're building at the moment, and that's just going. We've been trucking, you know, huge volumes of apples into that complex for packing, and having it just a forklift away, if you like, is going to create a lot of efficiency. It's a big store, and it'll give us a lot of efficiency. And then just, yeah, the continual work of the guys, you know, looking at their poorer varieties. The Pacific Rose is a variety that we've, you know, it's a harder apple to grow at good yields, and it's had, you know, it hasn't packed out as well as we'd have liked. So, you know, we've sort of, if you like, not, you know, we're pulling our hectares of that down from, you know, significantly, and ultimately we will exit that variety, for example, and just replacing it with these higher yielding and higher pricing apples. So I think it's the area that we don't mention there that we've had significant costs out of in the recent years is our pack houses. And there's still more automation put into those pack houses to lower the cost of per TCE.
So just on that, so, I mean, taking into consideration that you expect a normalisation in prices and a lot of cost-out initiatives, just why isn't that graph expecting quite significant uplift in EBIT margins going forward?
Well, I guess it's the point we raised at the start. We have had the, if you like, the wage cost lift from $17 to $21 an hour. So, you know, that's a huge part of our costs. Compliance is an area where, you know, costs are rising. I guess, you know, we deal with the FX and the shipping costs, you know, yearly, but, you know, we've got to manage that as well. So it's a, you know, the cost pressures are real, and, you know, these initiatives we're doing, if you like, the thinking is to hold that margin, you know, at that forecast level. because, you know, I mean, labour, you know, is a significant and government legislated increase in cost.
So can we assume that you are so built into that graph? We can assume that pricing does experience an uplift from the premium varieties and a normalisation, and then also cost out. But then that's essentially offset by the fact that we've got rising labour costs.
Well, I think I guess that is the fact. I mean, the rising labour cost has been factored in. We're paying it this year, we've paid it last year, and we'll pay it again next year. But it's, you know, going to, I think under this Labour government, it was to be held at $21. Is that right?
I think it's
$21.
Yep. So we've factored that in. The cost of doing business in New Zealand is not going down. And we have to do better to, you know, keep going ahead, and we've got plans to do that.
Great. I think it was in the full year report for 2019, sort of indicated that you expected a price based on 2019 prices, a weighted average price of about $37 by 2023. Are you still expecting to get to that point?
Yeah, we haven't changed our assumptions around pricing.
Okay, cool. Great, thanks for that. Moving on, if I may, I don't want to take up too much time, but are you assuming that volumes back to China, like the geographic mix goes back to normal as well? So obviously European volumes way up this year. We can see that reverting back to Asia in the years going forward.
Yeah, I think that would be a fair assumption. Yeah,
and also a softer European crop forecasted for 2020. Do you expect maybe a little bit of support in the European UK markets for next year?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, there's definitely a softer China crop as well.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool. That's good to know. Just lastly from me, the construction for the coal store near the Whakatū packhouse, is that kind of going according to plan?
Yep. It'll be finished by Christmas.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys. That's it from me for now.
Cheers.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Adrian Orborn from Jarden. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, guys. Can I ask two questions? Just on the pet food part of the business, now that you've had more time to integrate it and get used to Shelby, originally with that part of the business, I think you were hoping to lift the EBITDA by $10 million, and there was an additional sort of $50 million of investment required to support that. But I think where that investment amongst that whole sort of group of businesses was to be placed was still to be determined. Can you give us an update on whether you've determined that yet, and if so, where that sort of money would be likely to be spent?
Yeah, well, at the moment, we're enjoying the happy place of getting earnings without any more capital. So, that's where, you know, the business is performing incredibly strongly. As you know, the group business is going well nationally. But I think your question is the allocation of more capital to it will be, you know, I think. You know, bolt-on businesses, Adrian, for potentially bringing in new products, e.g. fish or, you know, other proteins. So I think, you know, the new initiatives have been more adding to Shelby Organic, as I mentioned, quite capital light, what we've done in Dodge City. It's just a new processing plant that we've got, you know, supply agreements into that actually ends up making our product, you know, on contract, and then we trade it. So it's very capital light, but, you know, it's going to contribute a good margin.
Right, okay. And then just a second question. Just with, like, the way that risk-free rates have been dropping like a stone and at very low levels, can you give us sort of an update on how the sort of you and the board are thinking about that in terms of, I guess, price you pay or price you potentially pay for assets, and what sort of, whether that sort of permeated into some of the vendors' expectations that you sort of butt into?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question, Adrian. It's a challenge because, you know, we're still kind of looking at, you know, 15% Rockies, but, you know, clearly the weight of cash going into, you know, if you like, assets at the moment is causing very high valuations. So, you know, we've got a battle there, if you like, but, you know, we continue to look across a wide sphere of businesses and industries within the agribusiness set. And, you know, we feel there's opportunities there, and it's, you know, just the ability to get, you know, reasonable due diligence done on them, given this, you know, inability to get around has probably been our biggest handicap at the moment. But, yeah, going to still try and, you know, beat, you know, maintain those good Rocky performances is what our investment thesis remains.
Right, so take it from that, like, you've got a sort of a reverting sort of expectation into the future, given you've got to own these assets into the future when you're making your ultimate decisions.
Yeah.
Well, you haven't softened on that effectively, I suppose.
No, we, you know, probably sort of see the current, you know, there's just this huge stimulus gone in from the governments, hasn't it? And, you know, at some point that's got to slow down and either and hopefully stop before we're bankrupted, and then things will revert to normal, yeah.
And then just in terms of just following on from that, like, I guess the previous sort of when you put your criteria out, which I know is going back probably 12 months now, was more sort of facing, like, vertical kind of opportunities into China. Is now what you're signalling with your experience with Shelby that it could be either that or as strong as the opportunities into the US?
Yeah, well, I think that the US opportunities are very much orientated around pet food ingredients because of, you know, we just went there and got started, I guess, we've traded there for a long time, did the investment into Shelby. Fantastic. Very pleased with that investment. The people are of incredibly good caliber and great to work with, and we'll be very pleased to give them more capital if the opportunity presents itself. And our partner there, Brett, is just been, you know, really solid and supportive of our plans.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Hugh Stringleman from NZ Farmers Weekly. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, Andy. Can I ask a question about the Hawke's Bay drought and whether that impacted your water supplies in any way, and if perhaps there's an ongoing effect there too as well?
Yeah, hi, Hugh. Look, no, it didn't affect us. So you see there we got a record crop in that drought because we have very, very good resource that is, and the water, irrigation water is applied very strategically. So it's sort of, you know, put on in drip form. So we're supplying the water, you know, as the tree needed it. I think we might have got one small orchard impacted by, you know, a water restriction, but, you know, overall getting a record crop in what was an incredibly difficult drought, yes, I agree. But, you know, I think our water resource is one of our critical success factors in Hawke's Bay, and we can, you know, we're working hard to, you know, do everything in a very sustainable way and retain the rights, the water rights we've got.
Good, thank you. And a question about the 2D planting. How would you assess your speed of that? And are you an industry innovator in that, or is it a well-proven technique around the industry?
Yeah, well, look, it's, you know, those 140 hectares we talk about being redeveloped in from 18 to 20 have all been done in that, so it's a very good start. I would say we're definitely an innovator on that one because we haven't followed the, if you like, the traditional plant and food recommendations there, because their ones were nearly twice the cost to establish, which that was one of the reasons we put it off. But our guys are very orientated around what's best for the tree to produce the best yield. Whereas, you know, talking to Andrew Van Werkham and Richard Hill recently, they feel that the more expensive models are sort of if you like, trying to dictate to the tree, whereas our one is more, you know, the tree will grow naturally on that two-dimensional structure we've put in place. So we're a bit of a, you know, I'm relying on our 30 plus year of experience and a fantastic team that know what they're doing in apples on that one, Hugh.
Sure. And would you anticipate sort of sitting still for the next couple of years to see if it actually does work before you go further in the conversion?
There's an element of that discussion happening at the board table, yes.
Okay. That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I will now hand back to Mr. Borland for closing remarks.
Yeah, well, thanks all for participating in today's call. Yeah, it's been anything but a normal six-month period, but we're pleased with the manner in which we dealt with the challenges the teams faced with the COVID pandemic. We're actually happy with the overall results and we look forward to updating you further later in the year. And yeah, thank you very much for your support and interest. Good night. Well, good afternoon.